This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Donvan in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Around 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night this past October, Rita Bettish in Pennsylvania picked up the phone and called her sister, Judy Bottomley, who is in Arizona. It would be the first time they would ever hold a conversation together. Apart all of their lives, and Rita is now 78 and Judy 74, they found each other only 11 weeks ago, but still in time. Their first face-to-face meeting is set for February 20th, but they've been on the phone with each other constantly, and both are on with us now. Before we speak with Rita and Judy, we want to invite you to call us also. If you have reunited with a long-lost relative, did it go as you expected? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Let's start with Rita in Pennsylvania. Rita, the younger sister, that phone call I just described, Rita, you made that call. It was the first time you ever heard your sister's voice, correct?
Yes, it is.
And did you plan out, Rita, what you were going to say to Judy? And then did you actually get to say it?
Well, actually, we didn't get to say everything we wanted to say. We talked for about an hour and a half. And when I went on there, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to say, really. I was not planning anything.
Were you nervous?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I still am. But, yes, that was so exciting. And I just figured it would go as whatever, you know, as we talked.
So what did you talk about?
Mostly family. And she needed to find out all about her family that she'd never known before. And I had the answers, so she mostly asked questions, and I asked questions about her and how things, you know, how she got to be where she is, and all that she's done, and everything, what memories she might have. And
well, let's meet Judy as you just did 11 weeks ago. Judy, hi, welcome to Talk of the Nation. Judy, hi, are you with us?
Oh no.
Well, we'll find her. I think that she accidentally got cut off, but we can keep talking with you, Rita. Tell me, Judy actually got this process of meeting together started because she was the one who was really separated from the rest of the family. What happened in her life?
Mom had to give her up whenever she was, well, I don't know how old she was, really, but she was very young, and because life was really bad in 1938. She just couldn't get, you know, babysitters or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Mom had to work, so she couldn't keep her child. And so she had to give her up. And as far as we knew, I didn't even know that she went to a children's home to be adopted until they called me. Anyway, she has been the light of my life, you know, since I found out that
since
she
October.
Was my sister. Yes.
So you had brothers but no sisters. You did not realize you were a woman with a sister.
Right. I didn't have any real sisters. I have I had two half sisters, one of which is passed on, and a half brother who's passed on, and I have a sister Ruth, or a half sister Ruth. I think of her as my sister.
Okay. Well, you know what, Judy's just joined us, so let me jump in and because we want to bring her into the conversation as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So Judy in Arizona, you're the older sister, 74 years old.
I'm almost 75 next month.
Happy birthday, almost. And your mom
gave you
up for adoption, and you really fought this fight to get back in touch with your birth mother's family.
Oh, I did.
What were you looking for?
I fought it big time. I mean, I called and wrote the agency numerous times, and I almost got down on my knees and begged and cried and everything else. I finally wrote a rather cryptic letter. They sent me a letter that wanted to know if I wanted my parents and also my sister's information. I said, oh, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Then they sent it back and said, the sister you can have, but the parents are denied. And I wrote back and I said, hey, that's okay.
Well,
I got it all from Rita, so.
Let's talk about what that first conversation with Rita. So what were the basic questions that you were asking Rita in that first conversation about the family that to give you up?
Oh, goodness, I was so interested and were concerned about my parents and my family and everything. I didn't realize I had so many sisters and brothers. But I asked, you know, like, what are my parents' names and where were they born and where did they die? And brother's name, same thing there. And the first thing was just, oh, Rita, I'm so glad to hear from you, you know, type of thing.
So you really, you didn't even know your mother's and father's names?
No.
And having these...
Not until I talked to her.
And having these dots, kind of these blank spaces filled in to your life at the age of 74, what was that like?
Surprising, shocking, happy, fulfilling. It really was good to be able to know finally everything about them. I used to stand, in my dreams, I used to stand on the street corner and look across the street in Roanoke, Virginia, and wonder if one of those people was my mother. And so it's something that I've known all my life, but it's something that I've wanted to know more about them, you know, all my life. She was able to fill in a lot of blanks.
So it sounds like some of this was a mystery. Not that you were looking...
Oh, yeah.
Not that you were
the whole thing was a mystery until I got a deal on October 9th that said permission granted. And I know Rita got the same thing. And it just,
yeah.
two words that just, I sat there just bawled.
Yeah, me too.
I think I've won all my life.
I've learned that both of you in the latter part of your careers, you both happen to work in your separate communities as church secretaries. You did the same thing.
Yeah.
Total coincidence or something going on there, do you think?
Total coincidence.
So Rita, as the younger sister, as you said before, you didn't know that you have a sister, but does it, I mean, honestly, it's easy for us to celebrate this, but does it feel, does it feel sisterly to you? Do you have that, the full sense of that connection to Judy yet? Or is that something that you need to work out?
Well, I know she's my sister. I believe that very much. And I think it's going to be, it's been somewhat of a dream, actually, that I'm afraid it's going to wake up and it's not happening, you know. But I think it will really feel like it once we meet each other, yeah.
Peter Pan world.
Yeah, if I can give you a hug.
It's kind of a fantasy type of thing that's coming true.
Yeah, that's right.
How often are you talking with each other on the phone these days?
Oh gosh.
Maybe every other day or whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
So, and in between, we send emails back and forth like crazy.
So what are you talking about with each other?
Oh, everything. Yeah. There's
everything,
always something to come up.
What we're doing daily, what the weather's like, how much we appreciate each other. We're grateful to have each other found. And it can hardly wait till they come out in February. Is it February 20th yet?
February 20th yet? I hear you keep asking yourself that question. So that's the day that you actually meet. And are you, as you imagine that day now, what happens on that day?
Lots of tears, happy tears.
That's right.
And lots of hugs.
A lot of talking.
Grateful that I get to meet her.
Yeah.
I have her picture, but I haven't met her.
Yeah,
and that's,
me too.
It's going to be exciting.
Judy, this may be a little bit of a hard question because it sounds so obvious, but just take a moment and think, and maybe the answer is just obvious. But what got, you know, you said that this, to some degree, it solved a mystery for you, but it also seems like it filled something in for you. Something got filled in your 70s by finding out you had Rita as a sister. What is that thing that got filled?
Probably not being able to get my hands on her and hug her yet. Just to be able to feel her, that I actually know she's right there instead of just a voice on the phone.
Yeah, she fills my heart with that void that I've been longing for ages. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Did you feel
all my life I've wanted to have a sister. My folks asked me if you wanted anything in particular, the most important thing you'd want, what would it be? And I said a sister or brother. And my mother couldn't have any more children. She said, I can't do that. And it just, she knew, and I guess I heard her when I asked that, but I really wanted somebody. It was a lonely life growing up. I had friends. I even had neighbors, but it wasn't the same.
And Rita, how is it different for you now, knowing that you have a sister? Because you had siblings, and your mom was with you. You experienced this equation at the opposite end. But are you to some degree still digesting everything that's going on?
Yes,
oh, yeah.
I am. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, even though I had a brother growing up, you know, it's not like having a sister. Yeah. I mean, I had the half sisters, and I knew them a little bit, but I didn't get to be with them very much, so we weren't very close. And if I could have had an older sister or a younger sister, it would have been wonderful.
You don't have anybody to share dolls with or to play house with or anything like that.
That's right, yeah.
And obviously,
having a neighbor.
Judy, obviously your birth mom is gone. Would you want to say something to her if she were still alive?
Oh, I would tell her I love her. I'm so grateful she didn't abort me.
Yeah.
So many people have abortions. And we've got a daughter that we adopted. And I'm so glad that her mother didn't abort her, too. There's so many other options. They could give it up for adoption and give them a life instead of killing them.
She would never have done that.
So, Judy, you feel your life, despite everything, turned out pretty good. And it's got and now closer to the ending, let's say, it's taken a very, very good turn.
Yeah.
It has. Oh, yes.
Well, I want to thank both of you for sharing this story, and it's wonderful, and I guess you get to celebrate Christmas for the first time with sisters in your lives. Congratulations to both of you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
so, Rita Bettish, Judy Bottomley, sisters, together at last. They joined us by phone from Tarrantown, Pennsylvania, and Mesa, Arizona. Thanks, both of you, so much for sharing that story with us. When we come back, more on the topic of reunions. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Donvan. There's an old saying that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and we use it to describe kids who end up taking after their parents in a lot of ways. But when parent and child grow up apart, both are left wondering what traits they actually share. And when siblings grow up never knowing one another, they can miss parts of their own story, blank spots that can only begin to be filled in via a reunion. So that's what we are talking about today, reunions with long-lost family members. And if you've been through one, if you found a family member or one found you, did the reunion go how you expected it would? Give us a call and tell us your story. Our number is 800-989-8255, or send us an email, talk@npr.org. Andrew Solomon is the author of Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. He joins me now by phone from Westchester County in New York. Andrew, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
What a pleasure to be here.
So, Andrew, just before the break, we heard Rita and Judy, siblings who were reunited after decades apart. You have been writing and thinking extensively about family and identity. What did you hear in their story?
You know, what I heard was the fact that everyone has a yearning to understand themselves and to understand their origins. And part of our origin is in nature, and part of it is in nurture. And I think those women both had experiences of nurture, but that they hadn't had the experience of nature that they'll have in finally getting to meet one another in 3D in real life, whenever that is in February. I think one feels that when you meet the other people who are related to you, things about you become explainable. I mean, I was struck that they said, oh, it's just a coincidence that we were both church secretaries. But I think when they meet each other and see what are the things we have in common, then they'll be able to say, oh, these qualities in me must be genetic, because look, I have them in common with someone I've never even spent time with before who shares some of my genes.
I wondered whether you were going to make something of their having those same jobs near the ends of their careers. It's very, very tempting, but you actually think that maybe there's something to it.
Yes. I mean, I don't think that there's a gene for being a church secretary, but I think that there are genes that perhaps cause people to be interested in faith, that cause people to be interested in being organized and efficient. I think there must be a set of different proclivities or intentions or ways of being that drove them toward that common place.
Well, Andrew, we'd like you to join in conversations with our listeners who we are asked to share their stories about reunions, family reunions we're talking about at this point. People who have found a long-lost relative who went on the search or who were found. And let's do what we just did with Rita and Judy. Let's listen to their stories, and then we'd just like you to share your impressions of what you're hearing. So let's bring in Sam from Orlando, Florida. Hi, Sam. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today? Happy holidays.
And to you as well.
So a couple of years ago, I found my mother on Facebook, basically, and my three brothers, and our reunion was so much, was so much better than I could have expected. I heard you guys just talking about nature versus nurture, mm-hmm. and I can definitely attest to the nature part. I had so much in common with my three brothers and my mom. We're all quite handy in the kitchen. We're all musically inclined. In fact, my other three brothers and I, we all play guitar, and we gravitated to the same areas of the country. We all lived in Southern Texas by choice, and it was just a wonderful experience. And the most unexpected thing is how normal our relationship is. We're like a regular family, just within a couple of years. Call on the birthdays, call on anniversaries.
Was there a transition period before normal kicked in?
You know, it wasn't. There was so much excitement and. It was a very heady experience, I guess, for all of us. That weekend that I went to Texas to meet them, I spent one night with each of my brothers, and we all had a day together with a big barbecue. And then really, there wasn't a transition period. It was, okay, I'll see you guys in a few months, and maybe we'll go camping, and we'll talk on the phone. We'll, IM each other when we can. And I have a sister from my adopted family, and the relationship of my adopted family and my birth family, they're the same. That's the thing that surprised me the most.
And Sam, Andrew was talking about, in a sense, in talking about this search for your nature connection to your family, what did you learn about yourself from meeting your brothers and your mom? Was it nothing, or did you, in addition to the sense of completion, I know these people, did you learn something about yourself?
I don't know. I'm still working on that. I saw myself reflected in my brothers and my mom, just our lifestyles. We've all been described as mercurial. I learned that I have the same tendencies that she does and that my other brothers did, to grab a hold of something and go with it. That was already something I knew about myself, but it was completing, I guess, to see it resonating in them as well.
Yeah, that's what I want to have Andrew respond to, is that sense of, I guess, completing is the word that Sam just put his finger on it. What is that sense of completion about? And do you think it's always there, Andrew?
You know, I think a lot of what everybody wants to achieve in life is, there are sort of two things that can come of these reunions. One of them is the sense of being loved, that one wants to find other people who love one. We all want to be loved. And the other is the sense of being known by somebody else. And if we are loved and known by others, it makes it easier for us to love and know ourselves. And I think when you don't know your point of origin, and I say this with a lot of personal investment, because I am married to a man. My husband was adopted, extremely close to his adoptive family, never met his birth family. But we now have a son who's biologically my son but adopted by my husband, and we had a friend who was our surrogate, but we had an egg donor. So this question of people looking for their origins, it's relevant to John, and it's relevant to our son George perhaps someday. I think everybody wants to understand himself. Everybody wants to think, I wonder why I feel these things. I wonder why these things make me sad. I wonder why these things make me feel like I really know who I am. And I think that there's a sense in which, as the caller we just heard from was describing, you get to know all of these people, and suddenly it's like the pieces drop into place, and you suddenly think, oh, I see. Oh, that makes sense. And we all want to make sense of our lives. And if there's some new piece of information that allows a bunch more stuff to make sense, that's a glorious breakthrough.
Is that what it is for you, Sam?
That's exactly what it is. I wish I was eloquent as your guest. You said it perfectly. The pieces fell right into place.
Well, Sam, thanks.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story.
It's absolutely. Happy holidays.
You
thank
too.
You.
It's very powerful. Let's go to Michael in Cecil, Wisconsin. Hi, Michael. You're on Talk of the Nation, and you're on with Andrew Solomon as well.
Hello. Excellent program. Thank you for having this program.
Sure.
I was adopted after a house fire in 1972. My mother at the time was 16. And what happened was after I was rescued by an uncle of mine who was only a child as well, with my mom being out at the bar, it was decided that I would go for adoption. And I was raised with a really nice family. However, there's this inner drive, even as a child. I was always told. I was adopted. I was told the truth from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, you know, there's something involved there where you have to respect a adoptive family for telling you so, but you really don't want to, well, I didn't want to hurt their feelings, but the drive to want to meet my family ended up, I was 16 when I met my birth dad after 3 years of trying to find him.
How did you try?
I found out he only lived three blocks away.
Oh, wow.
And I will tell you the experience from meeting him completed me. I am not only, I'm not lost anymore. I feel as though I met my... almost as if you would meet a soulmate. I imagine people have that feeling if they're lucky enough to be mm-hmm. with somebody that close, that feeling of knowing why I am who I am and feeling the same as there. It's indescribable.
Michael, I almost feel, coming over the airwaves here, I almost feel that I can feel tension in your voice on this, that this is hard to talk about still.
Yeah, it really is, because out of this, I know everybody wants cheery stories, but...
Actually, to tell you the truth, Michael, we want truthful stories, so just
yes,
keep going.
Yes, and the way it worked is my adopted family pretty much, how can I say, divorced me because of the reuniting with my adoptive family. Now, mm-hmm. at 40 years old now, I just met my mother's side, which my mother unfortunately passed away 3 years ago. But the doors that have opened leads me to faces of people that I swear if I was in Walmart and I heard this person talking next to me, I would say that person is my family. I mean, yeah. I know this. When I talk to them, I just feel a part of something that is real. And it's unfortunate. Yeah, the tension in my voice is, you know, it's really hard because the mother that raised me, the adoptive mother, she died of cancer a few years, actually in 99. But
Michael, let me just interrupt you and forgive me for doing that. You've said so much. I just want to let Andrew Solomon react to some of it. Andrew.
I wanted to react to what I think is the most poignant part of that story, which is the implication that if you are interested in your biological family, you are automatically rejecting of your adoptive family. I think that we have a system in which love is often set up as a finite resource that has to be competitively distributed. So if you find these other people and love them, it means that you've rejected and no longer love the people who have taken care of you. And I think that's a very, very sad way to see things. I think it's sad for all of the parents who are involved. It's true that we live in a society in which traditionally everyone has two parents. We live in a society increasingly in which family is being redefined in more and more complicated ways. And if this caller effectively had four parents, he had the parents who raised him, he had the parents who were his birth parents and whom he was able to track down. There should be no reason why one can't have relationships with all of them, meaningful relationships that may be closer or less close as time goes on and as they develop. But I think it would be a huge burden lifted from the shoulders of American society if we got away from this idea that everyone has two parents, no more than two parents, only two parents. Those are the two parents. If you don't have the loyalty to those two parents, you've chosen other parents. There's there's a sense of betrayal, I think.
That's unnecessary.
Buried in that story, and there didn't need to be betrayal. I don't know the details, of course, of exactly what happened,
well,
but I frequently heard that in that context.
Michael, thanks very much for your call and for the courage to tell us the truth on that one. Let's go to Renee in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Renee, you're on Talk of the Nation. How are
good,
you?
Good evening, or good afternoon. I'm doing well here. I have a sister. Her name's Elaine Bouvier. My dad was a part of Washington Circles years ago, and he was part of the Johnson Kennedy administration. And my dad died in 64, and I remember playing with her. And then I basically, my grandma said, forget about her. And then when I applied for a government job, they said, you have a sister. And I looked for her from 1980 to 2005, and we ended up working in the same company. And we had the same kind of jobs because I was working in administration and education. She was working in administration and education. And then she wouldn't talk to me, and I asked someone to find out why, and I hired a private investigator. And then I found out the truth that my dad was married to somebody else, and that he had another family. And then she would talk to the private investigator, but she wouldn't talk to me. And then finally she called me, and she gave me her phone number. And then I've been trying to find her. And then I went back to the private investigator now, and they said she just told us that she was okay, but I really like to see my sister Elaine Bouvier.
Renee, can I ask you to hold on for just a moment while I just want to say something for our stations. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Renee, my question to you is: it sounds already like a painful and complicated family situation, but nevertheless, you do really have this drive to want to meet your sister.
I do want to see her and talk to her versus talk through somebody, because I found out I found out that my dad was married to a second woman and he was a bigamist, and the child that I was from I really was from his first wife's marriage, and he put me in the home of the second marriage.
But Renee, why do you want to meet your sister? What do you want to connect with
her? The reason why I want to meet my sister is I remember all the good times before my dad died, and then when my grandma told me to forget about her, and I basically did. And I remember doing things with her, and I think that if she could share with me with where she was at and what she did, we would be able to do things together.
So it sounds like you're almost looking for what's the rest of the story of your life, in a sense.
The lot of the story's already been told in terms of who my family is and what it is, but I'd just like to be able to share because we both ended up in the same careers, and I don't think that's coincidental.
All right, Renee, thanks very much for your call, and thanks for joining us on Talk of the Nation. I'm going to bring in Matthew from San Jose, California. Hi, Matthew, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you for having me today, and happy this holidays.
Thank you.
So my story is that after my mom, I was living with her for a period of time, and she had picked up and said that she's moving and I'm not going with her. And so then thus, after about 13 years, during that period of time, the majority of my friends were saying you need to find her. And one day I just decided to look her up on the internet. I found three addresses in the local area here, and I found her. And I knew when I went up to the house that was her house, because she has specific roses that she puts in a specific place in the house. And so that particular time I could not go in. And then I went 2 months later, because I was living out in Chicago at the time, and I knocked on the door, and we met. And it's similar to what the person was saying earlier in the show. You have a kind of an immediate regression, because, you know, I just started crying, and she was like, why? And I said, because after all this time I found you. And one of the...
How many years had it been?
It had been about 13 years at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my friends, the first thing they're asking is, why did you leave? And I never asked her why. And the reason being is that, to me, it didn't matter, because you had so much time that's passed. Whatever reason she left, it was not substantial enough for us to continue our relationship. And then two most surprising things. One was the switch. When we were, when I was growing up, obviously, she was a very strong mother. And so I definitely understood my position as the child. But then things changed quite a bit. Well, I'm more of the adult for us, because she, my timing was right, because she ended up getting cancer very shortly after. And I immediately moved home, and we're fighting through that. The second thing, which explains everything, a lot of things in terms of why she didn't search me out, was 1 month to the year my mother had left, my father had died. And so she had called our house, and I never had any contact until that day. My sister and my mom had a conversation, And this is the first major death in the family. And my sister told my mother, we're okay. We don't need you. My mom took that as in, I don't want you in our lives anymore.
Oh, well, Matthew,
not knowing where I'm at.
Thanks for sharing this story, and I think we want to talk about it a little bit when we come back from a break. We're going to be back with Andrew Solomon and taking more of your calls. If you have found a long-lost relative, did your reunion go the way that you thought it would? Our number is 800-989-8255. I'm John Donvan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Donvan. Here are headlines from some of the other stories we're following today at NPR News. In his Christmas Day message, Pope Benedict XVI made a special call for peace in the Middle East. Speaking at St. Peter's Basilica today, the Pope denounced what he called the slaughter of the defenseless in Syria. He also called on Israelis and Palestinians to negotiate, and he encouraged China's leadership to permit more religious freedom. And a pastor in Newtown, Connecticut, told parishioners in his Christmas Day address that today is, quote, the day we begin everything all over again. The Reverend Robert Weiss spoke at the St. Rose of Lima Roman Catholic Church. Eight families there lost someone in the shooting earlier this month that killed 27 adults and children. You can hear details on both of those stories and, of course, much more later on today on All Things Considered. And here on Talk of the Nation, we are talking about family reunions, long-lost family members who find one another again after a lifetime lived apart. And we're joined by Andrew Solomon, who is the author of Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. We also want to hear from you. If you have reunited with a long-lost family member, did the reunion go how you thought it would? Give us a call. It's 800-989-8255, or send us an email, talk@npr.org. And Andrew Solomon, we were just hearing, particularly in the story from Matthew and some of the others, in answer to our question, did it go the way you wanted it to? The answer is yes, but it's a sort of yes, but, that around the edges there can be tensions and even some bad feelings. And I know one of the themes that you've written about among family members is the notion of acceptance. Of a family member who may not, in some way or other, and you go through many different ways that this might be true, may not live up to your expectation of what that, for a parent, for example, of what your child was going to be. And where do you hear this issue and tension over the need for acceptance coming into this reunion conversation?
You know, there are these two separate things that I think tend to get blended together inaccurately and inappropriately. And one is love, and the other is acceptance. And I think frequently when a parent doesn't supply the acceptance that a child wants, the child experiences it as a lack of love. And sometimes there are parents who also don't love their children. But a lot of the time the parents love the child but have a hard time wrapping their mind around this person who isn't how they planned and expected their child to be. So in my book, I wrote about what it was like for me to be the gay child of straight parents. I wrote about families of people with Down syndrome and autism, families of criminals, families of prodigies who were also quite overwhelmed. And I tried to look at the ways in which those families had to struggle to make sense out of these kids who they were never prepared to have and never prepared to have. And it is a kind of reunion that takes place when the acceptance kicks in. I mean, I never had a period when I didn't speak to my parents, but I felt like the point at which they fully accepted who I am, my life, my relationship, it was a great coming together that took place. And I heard that narrative over and over again. People said, I spent the first 10 years with this child with Down syndrome being angry and resentful, and then I realized I really loved my child and that she was who she was and we were going to have the relationship we were going to have. And there's a great sense of reunion that can take place.
And I would imagine in the kind of more, you know, reunions in the more literal sense that we're talking about it, that if there's been a separation between relatives over a period of 10, 20, 30 years, that the possibility that one person will become a completely different person from what would have been expected would just be higher. For example, you know, if a child grows up in a different country or even a different part of the country or in a different social group, that in itself could be an obstacle to some of these kinds of reunions that we're talking about.
I think it can be an obstacle. The other obstacle, which I think was illustrated by one of the callers just before the break, is that for a reunion to be joyful, it has to be something that's desired by both parties. And often both parties really do want a reunion. But sometimes one party really wants a reunion and the other one really doesn't. The other one really wants to maintain silence or distance or formality or whatever it is that's been set in, or anonymity. And it can be very difficult. It's like any love story. It's very difficult when there's somebody in love with someone who's not in love back.
Let's bring in Lewis from Clearwater, St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Lewis. You're on Talk of the Nation. What's your story?
I found my birth parents, and my father was dead, so I met peripheral members that told me about him, but my mother wouldn't see me. He was still alive, but I met members, you know, cousins, you know, her brother's children. Mm-hmm. Then she died, so that was pretty much the end of it. But what I found amazing was a freeze-out I got from my own family when my adoptive parents died. So
in a sense,
I was never really accepted.
That's what Andrew was just talking about. Is you had the impulse to find them? They didn't want to be found.
Right. See, the story I got was it was a bad period in her life. She didn't want to relive.
So where does that leave you? Do you regret, Lewis, that you even bothered to try? Would you prefer not to have had this outcome?
No, I was just curious. My sister was also adopted at the same time, and so she's still looking. She's having trouble with the clerk of the court. They won't give up the records.
All right, Lewis, thanks very much for sharing your story with us. Thanks for calling us. I want to bring in Sue in Tallahassee. Hi, Sue, you're on Talk of the Nation. Welcome.
Merry Christmas. I wanted to say my grandmother and my grandfather got divorced at a very young age, and everybody always said that my granddad was a really bad man. And when I was 19 years old, I looked him up in a phone book, and I went by his house, and he happened to be outside, and I walked up to him, and I said, "Hello, my name is Susie. I am your granddaughter." And he just started to cry and cry. And then he and I started this relationship during the summer, and we got to meet, or he got to meet all of our cousins and such, but my grandmother didn't know about this. And one night, we all got busted. She found us eating dinner together. And so we would sneak around, but ultimately what happened is we couldn't continue our relationship anymore. So it was really wonderful. Did it go the way I wanted it to go? It went better than I wanted it to go because I got to meet this really incredible man. But I loved my grandmother more than I loved this incredible man, so I couldn't see him anymore.
Wow. I mean, does that leave you just thinking that the family told the wrong story about him all this time?
Yes. My family did tell the wrong story all the time. He was a generous, kind, wonderful, wonderful person. We really got ripped off. But he got to meet all five of his grandchildren that one wonderful summer.
Andrew Solomon, any thoughts on that?
You know, I think it's great if one has any sort of opportunity at that kind of reunion. I think, as I said about one of the earlier callers, that it's a shame when people set up these competitive models of love. Mm-hmm. I think love is an additive thing, and that loving more people means that you have more love in you, and that there's no reason why somebody should cut off someone else. But I was thinking as I listened to the caller. About something that Colette said, the French writer Colette. She wrote in a book toward the end of her life that in the first years after her mother died, she felt that she had lost her and that she was forgetting her. And as she got older, she came to feel closer and closer to her. And she said, "Even though my mother has been dead for 50 years, now finally I feel truly close to her in a way I never did when she was alive." And so I think if you can have even that little window, the year that the caller just described, that can be a thrilling and amazing thing. And even though there may be no further contact, the spiritual growth, the inner growth, the sense of connectedness, the sense of being tied into the fabric of a family and of a life can become stronger and stronger, even in silence.
I mean, Andrew, I've been asking a few of the callers whether, when the situation is complicated, I didn't get to ask Sue this question, whether when the situation is complicated, the reunion is not some clean, simple Hallmark, happily ever after, whether they regret having gone ahead with the reunion. I mean, it's striking that so far nobody seems to regret finding out that need to know and that need to make that sense of connection and completion is just overwhelming.
Well, I also think that probably on Christmas Day, people aren't necessarily going to call in and tell you about how they had a reunion and it turned out to be a complete misery. But in the interviewing and work that I did, I found that there were people who often, they expected, when I meet this person who is my mother or my sister, when I meet this person, everything will become clear and we'll be just like each other and we'll get along perfectly. And then they meet and they're really strangers and they don't have very much in common, as it turns out. And it can be very disappointing and very shattering. And there can be unequal expectations on the two sides. Mm. So I think reunions can be the most glorious and beautiful thing, but I think they can also go terribly awry.
And you're also a realist about who will call and tell a story on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Karen from Stockton, California. Hi, Karen. You're on Talk of the Nation. Karen, I'm having a little... Oh, I've lost you. My apology. Give us another try back. In the meantime, I want to bring in Tom, who is in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Tom. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me on. I was rejected at 14 by my adopted family, and I stopped trying. Thank you.
Tom, do you have a question for Andrew about that, since he's thought about this a great deal?
I don't have any questions. I'm so lost. And I can't. She told the lady that answered the phone, told me not to say much, but my biological mom found me, and she was a lesbian, and I tried to call my half-brother, and she said she was angry at me, and then she wished she'd had an abortion with me, so I'm lost. And
well, what happened with your adoptive parents?
I stopped trying.
And Tom, I'm giving you're basically saying you have no family now.
I don't have nobody.
And it's the opposite of what everybody else here is trying to achieve, is making this connection. And having those connections just sounds like it's ripping you apart.
Yeah, they told me if I can't live under the roof living this lifestyle, so they kicked me out, and I had to live with male prostitutes, and I didn't know. I'm healthy, though, but I'm lost and confused, and I didn't get to finish school. And
all right, Tom, I don't want to drag any more out of this this, because it sounds like it's hurting you to talk about it. But I just want to. We have a couple minutes left, and I want to turn to Andrew Solomon, who's thought about this and see.
I'll go listen. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for calling us, Andrew.
Well, I mean, I think that's heartbreaking to have been rejected by so many people all around. And I think it's heartbreaking when you have that experience, which is really a lot of what I dealt with in my book, of parents who have a child who has a difference from them, what that caller termed his lifestyle, mm-hmm. but who are children who are different in some way. I found that for families where there's a great deal of love, the process of negotiating the challenge of autism or Down syndrome or schizophrenia or gayness or transgenderism or any of these things, in those strong families, there's a difficult period before acceptance is reached. Everybody has to go through a difficult period, just the way that everyone has to go through adolescence, which is a difficult period, even if you don't have any extraordinary qualities. But that most of the time, after you get through that, what you can come to is a mutual rediscovery and acceptance. But it's certainly not the case all the time. And there are parents who are abusive, and there are parents who are neglectful. There are adoptive parents who are abusive and neglectful. There are birth parents who are abusive and neglectful. And I think it's a tall order to overcome that. I think there are people who manage to live very good and vital and wonderful lives despite those experiences.
And reunion is taking all forms. And I want to thank Andrew Solomon, who is the author most recently of Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity. He joined us from Westchester County, New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation on NPR News.